It's Friday, and you've reached the Kelly Wendland Podcast. On today's podcast, we talk with IT recruiter and self-proclaimed gearhead, John Nilsson. Coming up next. Welcome to the Kelly Wendland Podcast. How are you this fine Friday, sir?
I'm well. Kelly, how about yourself?
I'm doing good. Hey, to jump right into it, before I get to the exciting world of IT recruiting, you are a self-proclaimed car guy, or what do you call it? Would you call yourself a gearhead or a car guy?
Gearhead. Yeah.
You're a gearhead. All right. So, and you take a lot of interesting trips. You have an old classic muscle car, and you were telling me about a route you had taken, Route 66, very famous highway in America. And I was wondering, for our listeners who have considered taking that Route 66 or have heard about that, What can they expect? Where does Route 66 start and where does it end? And tell us about what that journey is like.
You know, it is a fascinating trip from the standpoint that it is the road traveled west that was used. That route actually goes back to wagon trail days, right? That was the route west. Route 66 has been replaced by a few interstate highways, most notably Interstate 40 runs east-west through Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and into California. And the best way to travel is staying off the interstate highway, and you see sites like when you get into Winslow, Arizona, as an example. Everybody knows of Winslow, Arizona from the Eagles song, and it is a very vibrant community located on Route 66 with a lot of touristy things to see there. And they do play off that Eagles song very extensively.
So they have standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, and they've got shops and knickknacks for sale in Winslow related to the old Eagles song?
Absolutely do. And there's a sign that denotes the standing on a corner. You can have a photo op with. There is a flatbed Ford on the corner for a photo op opportunity. So I had my wife standing there as you're singing It's a Girl by a Lord on a flatbed Ford. You know, there's a lot of restored attractions along that route in various states. This past weekend, I was in Springfield, Illinois, which is denoted as the beginning of Route 66. There are things like restored gas stations for photo opportunities. They're not operational, but they're all restored as they were in the 20s and 30s.
And you said that, so Springfield, Illinois was back in the wagon train days. Was that considered maybe the place where population kind of ended at that point, and then you were going to make, you know, it was considered west all the way from Springfield all the way till you got to the California coast? Is that how that was in the 1800s or early 1900s?
Yeah, that's my understanding. You know, there are segments in Springfield that I've discovered this past weekend. The road moved a few different occasions. So there are segments of Route 66 that are denoted from, say, 1923 to 1937. There was another area that was from 1937 through 1944. And then there was a segment of road denoted from, say, 1944 to 1977, which is, I believe, when the interstate was completed and the road was decommissioned as such.
And so as you're going along, you talked about Arizona. What else stands out in your mind from taking that drive? And you know, is it every state has its own, you know, piece of Route 66 that they memorialize, or are there highlights that, you know, anybody who goes down is going to say, okay, here are the three or four spots that clearly are, you know, milestone spots that everybody should see on Route 66?
Yeah, you know, some of the communities do a real good job of highlighting those points of interest, and a lot of road signs will direct you out to historic Route 66. There are some parts of the road that are not accessible or really recommended travel because the roads are pretty deteriorated. And then there's other areas where they've been maintained well. I imagine local communities are responsible for the maintenance of them, which allows them to be traveled, right? Trying to think of the community we stayed in. It's drawn a blank right now. I think it might have been Gilbert. I have to look it up. But we spent a night in the Wigwam Motel. And if you've heard of the Wigwam Motel, each motel room is a concrete teepee with your sleeping quarters, bathroom, little lounge area. And I believe there was 14 teepees at that motel.
In what state was that in, John?
It was in Arizona. It was just before Winslow. I would have to take a look at a map to remember where that was. But it was a nicely restored motel. It's one of two that still exist. I believe they say there was 12 of them at one time along Route 66.
And you partially answered.
And that was in Holbrook, Arizona.
Holbrook, okay. And you've partially answered my question on this one, but it sounds like the interstate has not been kept up, that there's not federal funds in place as a historic landmark from Springfield all the way to the California coast to make sure the highway is in great shape for people to drive. Is that true?
Yeah, some of it has been maintained. Others, if you are running down Interstate 40, you're running parallel with Route 66, and you can see where the road has deteriorated to the point where no travel recommended. And there are areas where the road is accessible and less than desirable is about the way I would describe it. My goodness, it was a very pothole, bumpy ride for those 20-some miles we were on it.
And were you driving your old classic car?
Every mile, yes.
Does that thing have air conditioning?
You know, it did. So being in the desert, it was a welcome addition to that old car.
What kind of gas mileage does that thing get?
That car will get 20 plus miles per gallon.
It's a V8, isn't it?
It is. It is a muscle car with a muscle engine, but an overdrive transmission that allows me to get that decent gas mileage.
Well, that's got to be handy because in the olden days, I remember stories of people walking for gas because gas stations were so infrequently placed along that route. How is that today? Is it more manageable?
No, that is still lots of truth. There's a lot of miles between towns and gas stops.
Well, I guess people driving a Hummer may want to not take that route then.
That is true. Or you certainly need to be cognizant of your gas mileage and distance to the next town.
Sure.
And speaking from experience on our trip, Not that I was affected by it, but one of the people I traveled with had a breakdown. AAA does come to your rescue in time.
Is that a paid advertisement? That sounds like a paid advertisement. Are you selling AAA insurance these days?
No, I'm not. But as a person that travels extensively by car, it is a good thing to have in your back pocket.
Good to know. And well noted. Hey, where in California does it end?
You know, officially the Santa Monica Pier.
So in Los Angeles.
It's a long way to get there, but you do end up at the Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah. I consider that Los Angeles. Isn't that kind of right around Los Angeles?
Yeah, southern LA.
Yeah. And then what do? You get to the pier, you go walk out and you buy some food and hang out, and then you drive into LA and sleep for the night and then head back east.
We had a day on the pier at Santa Monica Pier, and there is a photo op there with a real big sign that declares it to be the end of Route 66. If you ever been to the Santa Monica Pier, there's a lot to do, a lot of neat restaurants, great seafood. And then we continued our journey up the Pacific Coast Highway until we were able to turn east to head back home by way of Utah and the Bonneville Salt Flats.
That sounds like a lot more interesting route for someone like me who likes the mountains and likes hiking and seeing the wildlife that's in the mountains. And
You know, if you've never been out there, certainly a sight to see would be in Oakman, Arizona, which is, I believe, that was the tallest point in Arizona along Route 66. It is a old mining town, still fairly vibrant, definitely aged in appearance. And it is most noted for all the wild burro that run around town.
Did you run around and try to jump on one and tame it?
I'm not sure that'd be possible. I don't know how close you could get to trying to mount one, but they do come up looking for food. And if you provide an apple for them, they're your friend for the day. They do not leave you alone. They'll follow you like a little puppy dog.
Well, if you go and have a few whiskeys at the local bar, I'm guessing you can jump on one and see if you can break one.
I would leave that to an experienced horseman person for sure.
Yes. So, hey, we should talk just quick IT recruiting. We won't talk too much about it, but you've been doing IT recruiting for a long time. How many years you've been doing IT recruiting?
You're going to date me, Kelly. I've been doing this for over 30 years.
Well, I'm going to date us. So, you know, what do you see these days? You know, nowadays we hear a lot of our people talking about remote work. You know, they're talking about the quality of the work. What are the hot buttons that make up a good assignment for candidates these days?
You know, that's a great question. I would say the hot buttons today are the ability to work with the latest technology. And everybody seems to want some type of purpose in the job they're doing. So with our organization, Logisol, we have a number of opportunities that can fulfill a person's desire for doing good. We have a lot of work in the healthcare space where we are building apps for our clients to better an individual's healthcare or their health outcome, if you will, whether that app is monitoring an individual's vitals, or perhaps reminding them to take a medication, or perhaps being involved in a clinical trial for a new medical device.
How How important is pay? I mean, pay is always at the top of most lists. Do you find that pay is still number one, and then right after that is fulfillment, or does it depend on the person in your, you know, in your experience?
Well, I think it depends on the person, most certainly. Everybody would like to see an increase in their pay rate. Every client would like to see rates decline for budget reasons. So it is a balancing act that we as recruiters need to recognize and work within constraints that the client has, explain these scenarios to our consultants and our candidates, and meet in the middle.
Yeah. What has changed in your 30 years? What has changed and what has remained the same when it comes to recruiting?
Great question. What's changed? The approach in this whole business has changed. When I got started in this line of work many years ago, we did not have computers, laptops, or databases. We had essentially a shoebox with index cards, and that's how we kept track of our candidates. You wrote down the pertinent information on the individual with the contact information. They were categorized by a discipline, and that is what you had for a database. So the electronic revolution, if you will, has made our job much easier with respect to tracking, maintaining contact, maintaining database of individuals, and growing your number of contacts. But what's remained the same is the need to reach out and establish a relationship, because that's what this business is all about, is relationships.
How do you go about, yeah.
I talk with people today that were workers, doer type individuals that are decision makers today.
How do you create those relationships in a world that moves so fast and it is a lot of digital connection points?
An honest conversation. Really, I will talk to an individual about an opportunity, and I will also ask the individual what they're looking for in their next opportunity, because I don't want to present a role that may not be of interest. In other words, if I am talking to an individual that is looking for a role that allows them to expand upon some new technologies they've touched on, I will try to present opportunities accordingly, rather than trying to convince them that they need to go work on this assignment that perhaps has older technology that they may not be interested in working with, because that will turn the individual off and perhaps not take my call again because he may have felt I wasn't listening.
Sure. Are people mean to you when you call, or are they generally pretty affable, or do you run into some people that are just flat out mean and they tell you to stop calling them and there's too many recruiters in the world?
You know, there is a segment of the day that goes that way, right? Not everybody's receptive to a call from a recruiter. I had one recently where I had found the individual's resume online and I did get a conversation with him. It was brief. He told me he was no longer looking. Thanks for the call. I tried to ask a couple of follow-on questions in a non-threatening or demanding way, if you will, and the fellow stayed on the line with me for about another minute and a half to answer my questions. Just essentially, where'd you go? What are you going to do? Who do you know? Looking for a referral.
So that person was a good example of trying to help, really, right? It sounds like he wasn't being mean, or it sounds more helpful than anything. Is that right?
He was willing to be helpful from the standpoint of in other words, my conversation with them turned from, hey, I'm looking for an individual that can do, to, well, congratulations on your new opportunity. Best wishes for continued successes. where did you end up landing? You know, I've got an opportunity I described to you. Do you know anybody that can do that job?
Sure.
So I'll still always ask for the referral. Not everybody is willing to provide a referral, but you don't know if you don't ask.
Yeah, and that's a good opportunity for them to maybe help a friend or a colleague. So that all makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, John Nelson, yes, thanks so much for your time. Have a great Friday and weekend, everybody. You are listening to the Kelly Weller Podcast.
It's the...